five items, two in the main, because the others are preliminaries. The first two are preliminaries, and the last one is closure. The two items, as mentioned, it's a, it's a briefing by the military ombuds on their annual report, 2019-2020. And the second one, it's a briefing by the military veterans appeals board, also on their annual report, 2019-2020. I will put that in the inverted commas because they are not an independent entity, and so. But we thought that we should interact with the entity on their annual activities report. So it's not a formal report, as it were, that they are mandated by law to table in Parliament. In actual fact, it forms part of the DMV, what you call Department of Military Veterans annual report. But we've taken interest in them, hence we've isolated them from that report because of the role they play in supporting the work of the Department of Military Veterans, as it were. So those are the two items on the agenda today. And so let me take apologies. Brian, are there any apologies?
Yes, sir. We've got an apology from the Honourable Minister, Mapisa Ngakula. She is attending a conference of women generals in the SANDF. We also have an apology from General Olumisa. We've got a third apology from Ngosi Qelekulu. We've got a fourth apology from Honourable Maki.
So
that is all.
All right. So those are the apologies for today, colleagues. Are we missing any apology? I know that Dr. Vele Mianse van Rensburg is not in the meeting today. Our support staff, our researcher, is that correct, or is it this meeting or tomorrow's meeting? Where she?
That is correct. He is unavailable today.
All right. All right. So those are the apologies so far. And let me welcome those that are in the meeting. I welcome the Deputy Minister. I can see his name on the screen. And I also welcome the military ombud and his team. So amongst the people accompanying the chair of the, Lieutenant General Masondo is Advocate Damane Mkosana, Advocate Dube, Miss Pilei, Miss Mzuli Jaka, Mr. Jonas, Mr. Matosa, Miss Mazibogo, Miss Vahamut, and Miss Tudibe. That's the team that is part of the delegation led by Lieutenant General Masondo, the military ombud. And from the appeals board is Miss Nomsa Dlamini, Miss Charmaine Twala, and Advocate Mashtrudu. Those are from the appeals board. I understand the chair of the appeals board is ill disposed. that is Babu Mavuso Msimanga. So he will not be with us today. Last time he surprised us, he joined us from his bed, from his sick bed. So we really appreciated that he could come out of that environment to be part of the meeting. And he realized that it was the first meeting of the board with the committee, and that the matters were very critical when it comes to the performance of the entity. Right. So those are the those who are present from the two entities. And once again, I want to repeat that the military ombuds were dealing with their final report, the report 2019-2020, and that the appeals board were dealing with their annual activities report. I'm trying to draw a distinction between the two, and so that it's clear that they are not an entity that reports directly to Parliament, but Parliament has taken interest in their matters. Hence, we've called them in to interact with us on their activities for the past year, and they also project into the new financial year. Having said those, and Brian, I'm sure you are happy we can then start with the first briefing. Are you happy, Brian?
That is correct, sir.
Thank you so much. That is in order. Colleagues, may I then invite Lieutenant General Masondo to brief the committee on their annual report 2019-2020. And over to you, General.
Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members. Let me also use this opportunity to acknowledge the presence of our Deputy Minister and also convey my greetings to him. Although we are in the same department, we don't get to see one another as often because of the challenges of the COVID. But Chair, let me also express my gratitude to you for introducing members of my team. I think it is an opportunity that we are able to meet virtually, because it would be costly for the office to take such a huge delegation to Parliament. But it's an opportunity we welcome, because we want the management in the office to be exposed to our interactions with the committee. Having said that, Honorable Chair, we as an office, we really welcome the opportunity to account to Parliament in terms of the activities of the office. And therefore, we really value opportunities like this, so that we are able to clarify what we do as an office and also account for our activities. Having said that, then, Honorable Chair, the presentation will be made by our Chief Planner, Mr. Annelies Vlasamo, after which then we'll be open to questions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks, General. So, with those remarks, so who are you handing over to?
The Chief Planner of the office
would be
the one taking us through the
presentation. Ms. Annelies Vlasamo. Okay. Ms. Vlasamo, you are welcome. Thanks. Ms.
Vlasamo. Good morning. Thank you so much, many honorable members of the Party of the Legislature.
Could you mention that somebody disabled us for sharing the presentation on your site? So all of us on this site can see the presentation, but there's some kind of disablement on the host side.
I suspected there was a problem. Brian, our host and the IT person, can you attend to that, please? She says she can see the presentation on the screen on their side, but we can't see it from this side. Can you see it on your side, General?
Yes, sir. From our side, you can see the presentation.
Oh, you are together. All right.
Yes, yes.
And so I don't know what my... Maybe let's check that. Brian, can you do it from our side? From your side?
Sir, I can do it from my side because I have not disabled them from reflecting the presentation. Perhaps it's an IT issue, but I can upload it from my side.
Yes, just do that so that let's hope they would also see it from their side as well, so that we can share from the same screen. Let's see how it goes.
Could they try again, Chair? I see that there is somewhere where I have the permission to allow them, if they can try again to share.
All right. Ms. Bahamut, permission granted. You may share now. Now that's fantastic. I know Brian is also on a learning curve. All right, so it's on the screen now, full blown. Over to Ms. Bahamut.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity, and we really appreciate it. Presentation, basically on our annual activity report for the year 2019-2020. The aim of the presentation is to present the Military Ombuds Annual Activity Report for the financial year 2019-2020 as per the Portfolio Committee on Defence and System Program. During the course of the presentation, we will focus on five main areas: the strategic environment, the performance overview, governance, our operations, our core business environment, and then our support. If we look at our vision, members of the portfolio committee, our vision has been changed in the last 3 years, still remains to be a world-leading independent and inclusive military ombuds institution. Our mission also remains the same, to provide an independent, impartial and expedition comparative for serving as former members of the public to promote this government. Our mandate, as captured in the Military Ombuds Act No. 4 of 2012, investigate complaints lodged in writing by a member regarding internal conditions of service, a former member regarding internal conditions of service, a member of the public regarding the official conduct of a member of the Defence Force, or a person acting on behalf of a member. The barriers that we as an office would like to be known for is accountability, confidentiality, commitment, impartiality, decision making, and integrity. The organization structure as was approved in 2012 by the minister, and we need to take note that since 2012 the office never reviewed its structure. It is a fault in stone for now. So we report straight to the Minister of Defence and military veterans as an organ of state. Other environments that we put into our organs of state is the Defence Service Commission and the Defence Council. The structure of the office members consists out of basically two functional areas. We are the corporate operations environment or the corporate support environment, corporate operations office is the environment, the core business that is responsible for the effective and efficient resolution of complaints in a fair economic and institutional manner as described in the Act. The total office consists out of a total of 89 funds, with the majority of that 89 funds focusing on the operations environment, like we explained before. If we have a quick overview of our performance, very through the year 1920, the Office of the Military Ombuds listed 12 performance indicators, which most of them were achieved. And there was only three areas where we had a bit of a challenge, and that was in the HR environment, the logistics environment, and our IT. 99% of the other environments were green as they were. If we look at our governance structure, we as an office have established a corporate governance structure to ensure that we enhance accountability, timely and accurate disclosure, dealing fairly with our stakeholder interests and maintain high standards of business ethics and integrity. We agreed to this governance structure with the following what stood in place: our executive expo meeting, which happens on a quarterly basis, and that is chaired by the Ombudsman; the Manpower, which is our management committee, chaired by the DMO, Deputy Minister Office, and that happens on a monthly basis. Then we also institutionalize the Military Ombuds Dashboard, which acts as an overseeing body in ensuring standardization of compliance to service delivery standards. They have our service rebates that are achieved by the Ombuds. We have our operations from the assessment meeting, where they on a weekly basis assess all these compliance specifics and shared by the Chief Director of Operations. We have our operations quality assurance dashboard to provide guidance with regards to the standardization of compliance handling within the investigation process. That happens on a fund basis and is also checked by the Director of Operations. And then lastly, we institutionalize a block of the list. We institutionalize a corporate support management meeting, and that's we do it twice a month. We need to discuss the status of all resource management within the office. With regards to our risk, if we look further, we still remain for the last 2 years the same risk, and the first one to be back is the two strategic risks that the office will start to identify and the annual activity report. The third one being that the Military Ombuds Act does not address the governance and accountability framework, monitoring the office to obtain institutional and financial independence. Our independence is the CTO service, that also posts conversations as well, previously. And then the other risk that we've identified is the credibility, integrity, and provisioning of management support of complaints. Large and captured all registers that are unreliable due to the limited availability of this information. And this is purely based on the fact that we, as an office, still run our complaint database from an Excel environment. And it's not as bigger as the institution, which got our case management system and those things. So that remains what still captured the mind and the risk for the office. We now move over into our core business environment. All the focus is for the office, and we as an office agreed that that's the priority. We think the establishment of the office, we received a total number of 2,702 complaints and two dates we had the best, 2,606 complaints. We see the office with 148 active complaints by the end of financial year 2020. We also need to mention that during 2019, the
office received the total number of cases of 587 complaints, of which 439 were finalized, reaching us to the total percentage of 75%. The average turnaround time for investigation of complaints was 267 days, which is approximately 8 months per case. The number of complaints finalized within the financial year, as a recent backup, 438 was broken up into various categories, identifying which ones were finalized for which reason, and as the total number came out of total complaints dismissed on the status, complaints upheld, 67, complaints withdrawn by the complainant of 2, condemnation declined 6, complaints under of demand of 5, with no further reasons, 38, mediation, substantiation, and negotiation. Office is prepared to appropriate property petition of 31. Office taking the course of the court, not a condition of service. 5. Similar complaints were selected in this regard to the 87. And the logistic question was that they realized that there was one existing contract. The alternative is based on the 158 complaints registered at the end of the financial year. Your follow for the financial year 2016. We still have one complaint on the book. In 2018, we had 12 complaints on our register. 2019, we had 4, and then 2019, the number of complaints submitted through the mandate as to the mandate of the office during the year under the review, the Office of the Ministry of Office received a total of 308 new complaints, a total of 306 complaints relating to service conditions of members of the SAUD, which amounts to 99% of the new complaints received. Only two complaints were received due to the official conduct of a member. The list that you see below is the complaints category of the regulation that you have received of the 308 complaints, and they are a list as follows: that you have received on promotion, motion, and career intervention 61 complaints, service benefits and working environment 68, remuneration 2, service termination 5, utilization and placing 19, readings 18, education training 7, official conduct of a member of the SAUD 2, as mentioned in the previous one, and then the 46 that's captured under other, arranged from complaints relating to military veteran benefits, of which the military officer does not have a mandate, as well as those from members relating to injury testing for reasons of safety to the event. During the year of the 30s, the number of complaints received per service and for part of the members of the public, the majority of the complaints received during the financial year were against the SA Army, who in fact listed the number of 167, which made up the total of 54% of all release complaints that was received during the 2014 year. Complaints from members of the public were only 13, of the only 2 related to official conduct of a member. Majority of the complaints of members of the public were those who complained on behalf of members. This year, the office will also throw, the year of reporting, the office also throw a two-plus of complaints from members from former and non-sexual reporters. The requirements with assessing military veteran benefits. These complaints will refer to the Department of Defense. that most of the complaints came from the Inter Army, which was followed by the non-statutory forces, then SAM, then the Air Force, followed by the Navy, the public, and the Inter-Army. Complaints from current, former, and members of the public. Complaints from current serving members of the SAMES total 180 of the total new complaints received, which constitutes 59%. This is followed by 114 complaints received by former members. Complaints from members of the public were 30, as we have reported previously, which amounts to a total of 4%. And then the one complaint did not state the total. We also then included in the slide the rank level, so as the number of complaints received per rank level from current members as well as former members. We need to note that other ranks, how can you stop at NCOs? However, we need to clarify that other ranks means it is the NSD members, riflemen, signalmen, those people fall under. Complaints were foreign. During the year of reporting, the year under review, Office of the Military Ombuds saw an increase in the number of complaints that was lost from the North Wales. This was as a result of the poverty outbreak that was out in the province. Complaints from Bustang were the second highest, whereas in Pumalanga registered the lowest level of complaints. The growth indicates the exact number as per province. Complaints by gender. A large percentage of the complaints that were lodged within the Office of the Military Office for the student financial year were from males, which totals a number of 245, which constitutes 80% of the total complaints received, and 62, the additional 62 were submitted from female, and we also show that we have received one anonymous complaint for persons with high income. Implementation of recommendations or not. Implementation and non-implementation of recommendations. The number of recommendations that were awaiting implementation comprises of those that have been accepted by the Minister of the Sector for Military and has issued a directive for the SAMES to implement. It also constitutes of those that the Minister has not accepted and is directed that the report be reviewed. There are also complaints that were resolved in the SAMES, of which the defense sector will be implementing the recommendations that were the result of under the resolution. As you can see in the table below, the total number of complaints upheld by the end of the financial year is 67, the number of recommendations implemented 16, number of recommendations awaiting implementation 14, number of recommendations not accepted by the Minister 4, and the number of complaints resolved within the SAMES 14. As we reported there in the previous year also, the Office is studying a liaison program with the SAMES where they discuss and try and find future solutions. Complaints submitted. A total of 10 monthly liaison forum meetings with the SNCF and services themselves. The service, like I said, is to track and follow up on non-responses to investigations and pre-generally support, as well as the monitoring of progress on the recommendations that were made to implementation. These meetings are held in accordance with the memorandum of understanding with the Office of the Ministry of Ombuds and the Chief of the Ministry. We moved over to our stakeholder environment, our participation environment. We had a number of regional stakeholder interactions I would like to highlight one or two of them. I think the biggest one for us for the previous year was the annual military officer issue of the war. But we had a good staff member where General Sondhu recognized the people who went beyond call of duty to achieve the sexual equity. And that was based on aspects like high standards for workforce, excellent client relations, living the values of the office, and walking the extra mile. We also had, on the 17th of January, a little on the Markham Bath Breaking, and that is to create the region and synergy of the office. On external stakeholder interactions, we also had quite a number of interactions taking place, all listed as co-dates for the 6 days. Highlights for the office were the annual military office symposium on the 26th of April, the Senate year interview at launch, when we had the summary of the book on the 7 years of existence of the office, where General Mutombo also handed it over to the minister. We had a number of engagements with various ombudsman institutions. Highlighted, for example, the recent case police of ombuds. We discussed the outreach program and the collaboration of us and them. We also had the new military ombuds, not telling you anymore, inauguration in November 2019, which had been planned information, which was attended by the leader. We had the ministerial board team meeting on the 15th of January, which they came to speak to us on the sexual harassment situation in the district, and trying to find ways on how the office can assist them and to work in collaboration with each other. We had the sexual service commission to strengthen our bilateral relations and our current memorandum of understanding. On the international front, the office attended quite a number of international engagements. For example, we did the Military Office Africa Future Project, which we are still busy with. The 11th ICA preparatory meeting over the period of the 2012 African Regional Meeting. The 11th ICA in Bosnia, the International Ombuds Expo, where the office received quite a number of accolades for participating and for presenting the Ombuds Institution details, Foundation Council in Switzerland, 12 ICA charity meeting in Austria, and then also a big highlight for us was the International Training Meeting hosted by GMCI in Florida over the period 16th of September. The work of the operations environment, the support environment, the Then for outreach, the office includes our outreach program from the previous year. This year we did a total of 2 outreach programs. There were 6 outreaches done. We had 5. The number 9, Western Cape, 15, Northwest, 1, the Vilina Fall, 4, 2, State, 9, and the Northwest State. On the legal environment, we in the year 14, the previous day reported that the minister signed the directive giving the Ombuds Authority authority more independent. The minister signed that directive on 25 October 2018. In the 2019 cycle, the office of the university pursued the implementation of those directors. We also then shared and we confirmed a lot of the interactions of the understanding in the office and a number of issues like this is also the what is the chief of the executive, the tech for the same and the academy, the different public service solutions, the health office, the public sector of South Africa, South Africa's rights commission, other integrated support environment, just a few highlights from our side, where the office flags for a certain number of people, however the actual spend on the ground by the end of the reporting to have one. The number of the number of protocols that we have is 2, is 89 and 66, like we said we have the plan for 64, but we and we have so we had at the end of the morning to write it first. The first focus is now for 61 around 51.5 million. We also would like to highlight that during the reporting year, we had a certain number of 61 new development opportunities that were brought in the office, which means resources and supporting seminars. And then our equity figures from the total 61 feet on the ground, 26 of them are males, 23 African and 2 white, and then on the opposite side from the total number of 35 women, 31 African, 1 Asian, 1 colored and white. Financial management. The current economy and the strain that it is under on the first step, that the reduction of allocation means that the office has to be efficient in the sector that is allocating the scheme to ensure that the office is able to meet the mandate and expectation of its time to resolve or from the rest of the patients are complaints that are not resolved. It is endeavor to perform optimally, the office continues to evaluate performance and the use of the resources allocated to it. The office is however still affected by the compensation of the TV that is placed on the DRC. This matter will be addressed by the office as the expenditure analysis that both for the office COVID-19 financial year was 54.5 grand per month. The office had a total expenditure of 53 grand per month, of which 51.5 was spent on the compensation of and 11.5 grand per month was spent on operating costs. The allocation of compensation was 24% of the growth, while 26% of the growth had been for operation. The office is engaging with CEPIC to have the allocation of the office is that basis with the concentration of what is wanted. And clearly that is the end of our
story. Thank you very much for the opportunity. And we are now ready to take questions.
Thank you so much, General. Your headline in general was poor, but I allowed it because your presentation was, we could see the presentation. Let's hope during the interaction the line on your side will improve. I didn't have a problem with your line per se general, but it is a line that was a bit poor, the sound. So I hope we'll not have the repeat of this during the discussions, because there will be nothing before us to see. But I must indicate, General, thank you very much for the presentation. There is remarkable improvement. you see, it shows that the military ombuds is maturing, office, the military ombuds office is maturing by day, and I think you must be commended for this improvement, year-on-year improvement. With that, I now open the platform up for discussion, and let me just see if I can see hands on the platform. I know Honorable Mafanya is not used to this technology, and I can see Kopas, I see your hand. I'm not calling you up now. Let me just see if there's any other hand. Yes. All right. I can only see one hand for now. Or there's Alexander Brickers. That's the second hand. Any other hand? I'm conversing hands. And I know Mr. Mafanya believes in being caught up orally.
Oh, yeah. No, not this time around. No, thank you.
Okay, no, sure. I thought you were stretching, finding the platform. All right. So we have these two hands for now. Right. Let me start with you, Mr. Marais, and then Ms. Bukas. I will take the DM at the end of the what you call the discussions. And Mr. Murray?
Yes. Good morning, Chair. Good morning to you all. Good morning to the Military Ombuds Office. Thank you very much. Yes, I agree with you that the Military Ombuds has certainly improved, and it shows that where there's a will and a commitment, you know, there will always be a way. So they must be complimented with that, General Musondo. Well done. Yes, I mean, your office is dealing with all the difficult things and the challenges. And obviously the military ombud is doing great work, but once they have done findings and recommendations, you know, the question is then, now what now? You know, what happens to that in terms of findings and recommendations? And I know that we have touched on it in the past that, you know, they are not a Chapter 9 institution, so they are not totally independent, and they are relying on the goodwill of the Department of Defense and the Minister for funding and for accessibility, etc. So my first question is with regards to enforceability of the findings and the recommendations, because often I have seen inquiries that was addressed to me by people who will give me the documentation from the ombudsman to the minister in terms of a finding. There will be even a so-called instruction from the minister to the chief of the SANDF, and then subsequent to that, nothing happens. So obviously, you know, my question is, if the ombud is doing great work, what is the end result? And everything must be measured in terms of the eventual outcome, not the outcome as the military ombud has now reported to us, because that's to a certain extent a tick box exercise. And if it doesn't correlate with eventual implementation and satisfaction by the members or whoever has submitted the complaint, then one must question the validity and the legitimacy of the offer. So that's a major concern that I need the ombud to please recommend to that. I want to ask about the golf day that I've seen there. What is the purpose of a golf day for the military ombud? Who is your target market that attends the golf day? And what do you want to achieve with that? You know what, and also the cost, because in this time of austerity measures and economy that is under pressure, a golf day can be seen as a unnecessary luxury and a convenience to, you know, friends and colleagues and whoever you want to impress. But that must be the last in the row. So that is that. I'll pick that up. Then I also want to find out in terms of all the complaints received in the financial year under review, but also the current year, because the current year is an abnormal year with COVID and with Notlela. How many cases of death have you received complaints, and in how many cases was there outcomes, and what is the kind of outcomes from the complaints in terms of deaths of public or members where you have received complaints? On the mediation and conciliation that you have indicated, what is the kind of success rate in that? Not only in terms of your achievements, but again, the eventual results and the implementation. In other words, the members who have submitted complaints will come out and say, yes, I'm happy, it has gone through a process, yes, I've been reinstated, or yes, I am happy. I'm not satisfied with the outcome, but I'm happy that it was free and fair and all the opportunities was given. Chairperson, that is the... That is all at this stage. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mare. Ms. Bukas?
Thank you, Chair. My network is not good, so I will not switch on the video. Is it okay, Chair?
You are loud and clear, ma'am. Go ahead. It's okay.
Thank you. Chair, there is improvement in especially the outreach programs, and we really appreciate it. But can they please include the rural areas? They know I'm always speaking about the rural areas. And Chair, can they measure the impact of those engagements? And secondly, do they have a plan in place on public education in the future? Then, Chair, my second one is that I'm struggling to understand, for example, under the reasons for finalization that they say that 48 cases did not follow the grievance procedures. So my question is, Chair, what happened to those cases? Is there a process to make contact with those people, or are they just closing it because they did not follow the procedures? Or are they looking, for example, at the merits of those grievances? And then, Chair, lastly, the average turnaround time for finalization of cases, they say it's 247 days, almost 8 months. Why is it taking so long? Just to tell them, for example, that it did not follow the grievance processes. Are there a challenge, for example, with personnel in the investigation unit, or what is the reason? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, so Ombuds, let's take these questions from the two colleagues. We'll then go back to take a second round.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much.
Ms. Dlamini, please switch, mute your mic. Thank you. Over to you, General.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. The comments I was responding to the question the first one being the issue of the impossibility of finding the position. Honorable members, I want to start by saying there's no provision in our act that our recommendations are binding. But that being the situation, I also want to appreciate and acknowledge the attitude and position of the minister when it comes to our recommendation. Because in the majority of cases, the minister welcome accepted our recommendation. And in fact, in all of the circumstances, why she's not working with recently in some of the interviews in the US, we got to take a look at our recommendation. She has the instructor that the roles must be taken on this day. There are a few cases, of course, where the minister could not accept the recommendation to the students. And of course, that puts the office in a bit of a difficult position. Because the office of the recommendation, we cannot review whatever the recommendation. So it is one area of issues of concern. But for now, we accept the situation as a good thing. The second question is on the issue of the cost, the aim that we host at the hospital. And I understand the concern of the honorable mayor, but given the current situation in our country and the economic crisis, such an event where the hosting of us is a matter. But it is an event that is very important for the office to engage our stakeholders, because in a relaxed atmosphere where we can be able to then informally discuss some of the issues that brought us to the office, and also build the kind of relationship that promotes their confidence in terms of dealing with those stakeholders. Part of the question of how many cases we have received of the complaints about deaths of the civilian members, for that, I would ask my chief director of operations to touch on that. And also, we have the question of the fast-track rate of mediation and conciliation. So that is
thank you, Mr. Ombudsman. Would you like to the first question about the cases involving death of other member of the Supreme Court of Member of the Council? So far, we've only reported one case, and that is the first time. And that case is related to the action of the Supreme Court of Member of the Council.
The line is extremely poor. Can you do something to improve the sound?
Is that better, Chairperson?
Just please go ahead. I will indicate if there is no improvement.
So on the first question about the number of reported deaths, we only have one reported death, and that is the reported case. And the second question about the success rate of deviation, we found that all the cases that have been successfully resolved through conciliation and mediation have been implemented, because before a final report is sent off for sign-off by the office, we follow up with the complainant to check whether the undertaking that was made by the defense court is implemented. So I would say to say that we are at about 100% success rate, because even the defense court that offers to sell for it and the complainant will be upset. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Back to you, General.
Before I go to the General, I think I also got something on the issue of the cost, which is very important. The cost is that it's not the part of the government fiscal because of the issue of the austerity measures of the policy. And after the for that, that would get the sponsorship from some of our citizens. So what I'm saying in short, we're not saying the state to Thank you very much. If I am watching them,
Chairperson, my apologies, General. The sound is very, very bad, and I must be honest. I've heard the sound, but I haven't heard a word of, and I couldn't make out a word of that response, especially to the Golf Day. Sorry, General. My apologies. But it's just not very audible, really.
General, please try improve the sound quality, that's right. Basically, what you are saying, Mr. Mara, is that it's a correction that that he was making, that the Golf Day was sponsored. It was not paid from the coffers of the state, from the fiscus. All right. You may continue, General. Yes, a bit.
Yeah, not really much changed, I must say. Will the military ombud be prepared to give us information on that? You remember my part of my question on the Golf Day. It's just the purpose of that. I mean, if he doesn't spend money, no problem. But just in terms of the purpose of that, is that to build relationships? Is that to work with stakeholders? I just wanted to understand, the principle of why you're doing that, and obviously who sponsors.
But do you want to get to that level, Mr. Marais? Of who sponsors?
Yes. I think it's very important if we know that, in terms of how they operate and their objectives and how they want to achieve that. If that's part of how they want to achieve their objectives by working with certain stakeholders, then yes.
You see, but my mistake I now realize is that I allowed you to make a follow-up whilst they are still answering the questions.
Thank you, sir. That was just for clarity. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Can you continue answering the first batch of the questions and then deal with what the follow-up question is raising? But it was not the time for follow-up questions. Thanks. Over to you, General.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know what I said
I think it's better. Just, I can hear you, at least from my side. And if Mr. Marek doesn't hear you, maybe the problem is on his side. And
I hear you excellently, Chairperson. I hear you, but it is slightly a better use. Thank you so much.
Let's hear him then. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. If I may then proceed, the first question from was the issue of making sure that in our outreach program include the rural areas. Chair, maybe let me start by saying, where the FANDF deploys, especially when we are targeting members of the party with our outreach program, is mainly in rural areas. And therefore, we are targeting those areas, and we've been engaging with SPARCA to also assist us to outreach both the community. So in a way, we don't discriminate in terms of the areas that we go for our outreach program, but rather what we do is to try and target areas where there is interaction, for instance, between members of the SANDF and the public. But in terms of members of the SANDF, then we go to the military unit wherever they are located. Now, the second question was, what happens to the complaints that we receive, First of all, I want to indicate that in our work we want to respect the command and control within the SAMBN. And therefore, since the grievance procedure in the SAMBN, we want them to allow the SAMBN to actually deal with those students. Only when the complainants remain aggrieved, after that process, then we enter the grievance law. However, if members complain to us, because the office is also linked to the SAMBF IT system, therefore we are able to establish that the grievance procedure has not been fully followed. And then we advise the member to go back and follow that the channel. But we also then contact the people in the SAMBF who are responsible for writing the grievance system to make sure that the member that we respect is somehow assisted if there are all. But in cases where for instance it takes too long for the SAMBF to attend to the grievance that is outside the stipulated time frame, then we then entertain that grievance. I hope that everyone's able to answer that. Now the second issue is the next question was or rather concern about the time it takes to finalize complaints, which is reflected as 8 months. I need to point out that we are moving from a situation where it took us to a period of up to 3 years to finalize some of the complicated complaints that we received at the office. So we are conscious of the fact that our act requires us to deal with the complaints as quickly, which is why from my side as the office, I put in a huge effort that fast we are able to clear the backlog. And I've set the targets in terms of the initial targets are more complicated complaints, at least we need to aim to finalize those within 1 year and receive the ones within a period of 6 months. And of course, once we achieve that, we want to see from our levels, because for me, it is important that we are in a position to finalize complaints as speedily as possible. But currently it is important to indicate that one of the challenges in terms of speedily finalizing complaints is the issue of the turnaround time in terms of the information that we require for investigation from the SAMBF. And of course, as part of our analysis program, we are dealing with those issues, and the situation, I must say, is improving in terms of speedy
provision
of the information required. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much for those responses. Are there any further questions? I'm looking on the list, on the system. Any further questions, colleagues?
Okay, Mafanya.
Mr. Mafanya, I told you that he does it, he wants to do it orally. Mr. Mafanya, over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thanks for the opportunity, by the Ombud. Two questions. The first one is that I would like to find out whether there are cases that are dealt by the union complaining about yourselves, about you. And if there are, how many are they? Because unions also represent workers, where workers cannot find solutions, most probably from the ombuds. So I would like to know
in relation to the your relationship with the unions. Number two, I would like to put to you, Ombudsman, that 8 months, even though you say it used to take you three years, and you have reduced it to 8 months, I would like to put to you that during that period, whereby you have the turnaround goes to a period of 8 months, in your response you say you'd like to make it 6 months. But there are warm bodies there. There are people suspended. At some point, people expelled from the military. Now, and the very same people take the military to court. And there are litigations, and at some point, people have to be paid for having been suspended without pay. At some point, they are suspended with pay, and then eventually they get expelled. Now, those areas also, we discussed those areas whereby we felt that it is unjust and not fair for those who had to wait for such a period of time whereby their cases are dealt with. Now, the other part is where you have made recommendations, and those recommendations are taken up by military, and the courts overturn such rulings. Now, again, it dwells back to the competence level whereby the law is not applied thoroughly to an extent where people take their matters to court, and they become the issues that become overturned by court. And the case in point is whereby there are almost about 40 or 50 people who has been expelled from the military, and the cases also went through your department. So I would like you to give clarity to some of the things that I've just talked to. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Mr. Mafanya. Any other hand, colleagues? Do I see Thabo? Honorable Thabo's hand? No, it's not up yet. All right, colleagues, that takes care of all the questions asked so far. Let me just make a follow-up on Mr. Mafanya's question, if I may. General, we had a meeting with the Office of the Auditor General as chairs of various portfolio committees in Parliament. So we discussed the internal controls in various entities of government. And we resolved that from now onwards, we will call we'll invite the audit committees and the audit units of the various entities to come and share information with the committees of Parliament. So we'll not invite the accounting officer, we'll not invite the CFO or anyone else who is at that level in the department to come and talk to us, but we'll invite the internal audit and the internal audit and the audit committee, so that we discuss the control environment within each department. The reason why we've taken that decision is so that we can check if there are measures put in place to prevent irregularities in the department. Because it's cheaper to prevent, but expensive to deal with the irregularities, because you now have to recover, you must involve lawyers, and before lawyers is forensic, and then lawyers to recover and all that. Becomes extremely expensive. Whereas if it was prevented from happening, we would not have spent a cent. So this portfolio committee is going to move in that direction as well. So where we try and prevent a situation where there's expenditure that could have been avoided. Having said this, I wanted to raise the point that Mr. Mafanya is raising. You a fellow is dismissed. He reports the matter to you. You make a finding. Perhaps the finding says the fellow must be reinstated. And then the chief of the defense force says it doesn't implement the findings. The fellow, frustrated, takes the matter to court. The court rules in his favor, and still it falls on deaf ears. Deaf ears. Nobody listens to even the court. You were not listened to when you made the first findings, and causing the fellow to at great cost to approach the court. The court rules in his favor. Still, the department, the DOD, or the defense, just ignores the findings of the court. Now, you can see where that takes us to. We are now exposing the department to further litigation, where now we have to pay the cost and all that, just because the recommendations were not, when the recommendations were ignored, and even when the court found in the favor of the applicant, and the court ruling was ignored. And then you end up with a cost now, if the matter is to take it to court again, to ask for the court to enforce the ruling of the first of the court of court, the court of first instance. Now, who must bear that cost? I think we must get to a point where people start to bear the cost from their own pockets. I would want to hear what the DM would have to say on this one. Because, you know, when there is sheer, disregard of reason, putting the department or the SNDF at cost, exposing the SNDF to serious, cost, who must then pick up that bill? Must it be government? Must it be us, the taxpayers, who pick up the bill? Or must it be that person who in the first place refused wise counsel, even when it became the court ruling, still ignored it? Now to a point where the applicant has to go to court again to ask for the court to enforce its ruling with cost. Who must bear the cost? I think we must get to that point where it starts to hit at the pocket of the individuals. Because as long as the state pays, people would, there'll be no consequences. I think there's got to be consequence management, and consequence management must start from that level. And I thought I should raise this because I was provoked by the input by Mr. Mafanya. Over to you, and maybe you may want to comment on what I'm saying. I'll also invite the DM to comment on this, because we are moving in that direction slowly but surely. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Perhaps let me start with commenting on what you said. First, Chair, I want to state that sometimes the Chief of the National Defense Force is placed in a very difficult situation. In that is required by the Constitution to run the task force and the disciplinary force. And at the same time, he's let down, perhaps in some instances, by his staff, legal staff, and HR staff who deal with some of the acts of misdemeanor. Because, if I may make an example, somebody steals a weapon. And because the chief sees this as a very, very serious issue for a military man to do that, he then instructs that the person must be administratively discharged. In carrying out the instruction of the chief, then the people sometimes use the wrong section of the act to execute that administrative discharge. Person then comes to my office. The office looks at the issue from a legal point and a technical point of view. And say, we acknowledge the fact that this person is not disciplined and is not amenable to be a soldier, but he still has rights because he was supposed to be discharged in an administratively fair manner. So we then recommend that the person, based on the fact that, you know, was not properly administratively discharged, he must either be reinstated or he must be compensated. Now, Honorable Chair and members, we know what happens, okay. If a weapon in the defense force is stolen, that weapon can end up being used in some serious crime, and the victims end up litigating against the Department of Defense. So it is such difficult cases that you find the SNDF sometimes not wanting to implement the recommendation. But in our forum with the chief, we engage and discuss this difficult issue and try and make it visible to him that in fact, if he does not implement our recommendation, the person goes to court, the outcome can even be more difficult. So, briefly I'll say, this is the situation that we find, or rather the chief and the office sometimes find themselves. And on the issue that we touched on, Chair, of inviting both external and internal auditors to interact with your community. I want to assure you that from my position as the office, I want to make sure that this office has first and foremost to do our work according to a prescript and that we've got effective control measures. And in my assessment, I'm actually also assessed on audit issues, which is why we share with you, Chair, that I've invited internal audit to come and audit the office. Purely from the position that I want to have an assurance at the head of the institution that things are done correctly, and that we actually, and also that our control measures are in place, where we avoid a situation where state monies sometimes are not utilized optimally.
Then if I had, you can then move on to the questions that were posed by Honorable Masaya. The first one being, we sometimes deal with the cases from unions complaining about the office. I'm not aware that we have received complaints from the unions, but there are acts, many provisions that, members, former members and members of the family can lodge complaints directly with us, or somebody can lodge a complaint on their behalf. But where the complaint is lodged on behalf of the member, there's a requirement, therefore, that the person who is acting on behalf of the member must provide us with the power of attorney. I will later on give the mic to Chief Director of Operations just to confirm whether indeed we have had complaints coming from the unions. But personally, I'm not aware of that. Second question is on the members of the SADF who are traveling expands. And then they take the SADF to court, they win, and they have to be reinstated. It's true that such things happen because back in the example I gave earlier on, you'll find that the section in the act that was utilized to actually administratively dismiss or expel those people was the wrong section. But at a point in time, the SADF believed it was the correct section until the court then interpreted that section to the point where, therefore, the members had to be reinstated. The third question, I don't know whether I was really captured it correctly. It's about the court overturning our recommendations at the office. Can I just address the request another Mafanya just to clarify that so that they can then attempt to respond?
Mafanya, do you want to give clarity on that question?
I think you, Chair, through you, you have just explained it much better because it was more on who incurs the cost. So literally that once the case is being overturned and then it favors the client or the member, then it means there will be litigation that takes place. You covered it well, and then I think that is where you'd like to go to. Yeah? That who must incur the cost.
Okay.
Because it really it exposes us to such
questions.
Thanks.
Correct. Now, thank you very much. It is on that point that Mr. Mafanya would want to the DM's comment. I'm happy that Lieutenant General Mgwebe is also on the platform but for another discussion. But he was listening when I reported on the outcomes of our meeting with the Auditor General on the issue of the audit committees and the internal audit unit. But I'm not putting him on the spot right now. DM, we've come to the end of this discussion. You may want to give an overview comment and on the issues before we move off to the next item. Thanks.
Chairperson, and honorable members of the committee, members of parliament, colleagues from the military ombud and the acting
SDG of the Department of Military Veterans and the Appeals Board of the Military Veterans Department. I was going to say that in the meeting, I do know that we should have officials from the Office of the Minister who have the responsibility to take copious notes from which the salient points the minister may want to follow up in her next engagement with the community will be done. And I hope the colleagues from the minister's office will do so. I'm making this point, Chair, to say that it would be appropriate for me to advise that this conversation be shared with the minister and the observations made by the committee, because the military ombud is a body that functions under the minister. And I am just, you know, cautious that to observe propriety, I should not venture opinions out of 10. I should not venture suggestions in relation to how some of the work of the military ombud that should be dealt with because the minister's office is the one that deals with this particular body. Having said that, Chair, from where I sit, I just looked at their report, at the report of the military ombud, in relation to its performance. And I was satisfied with the report because the performance says that the organization's areas that are experiencing challenges is the blunt end of the organization, but the sharp end, as far as performance is concerned, it's performing well. According to the report that I just shared. And that gives me comfort. If there are challenges, they are not meeting targets with respect to matters and the business on their blunt end side of issues. Having said that, the one area that speaks to the sharp end, which I have in our previous meetings, I think observed, was that it looks like the military ombud functions under a constraint which may not have been expressly put in the law, or may not have been consciously that limitation put in the framework of the military ombud, because it does deny or deprive the military ombud's office to do certain things which the members of the public generally assume that the military ombud, among other things, will take care of. And that speaks to the way the Act defines the mandate of the military ombud, that the military ombud is a body that only gets approached. It gets activated when matters are referred to it. The Act does not allow the military ombud's office to voluntarily undertake to follow up matters which may have reached the military ombuds, and with a view in that office that something suggests that things were not done according to the law with respect to the conduct either of the SANDF or the conduct of the members of the SANDF. But they have to wait until somebody respects the matters. I don't think that necessarily it was consciously a limitation that the law intended to impose on the military ombuds. But this is the framework that we are working under now. It's a matter, obviously, which those who are in this environment of the military ombuds and the ministry should, of course, look into, so that should an opportunity avail itself for that framework to be adjusted, that we should not lose it. That is what I thought I should just, you know, refer to. I know that I have previously, I think, commented about that, and that's really all I wanted to say, Chairperson and members of the committee. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I think you said it all, DM. Very diplomatic as usual. I think you are right. And the cooperation, the close cooperation between yourself, General, and the top brass, especially the chief on the other side, will minimize risk. In that, not that we want a buddy-buddy relationship, that I think what will minimize risk is that you make you receive a complaint, conduct an investigation, and weigh the evidence and make the findings. That before the findings are made final, you share them with the top brass, especially the chief, to say that these are your preliminary findings, and invite them to comment, so that the final product comes out with the having heard their side of the story. I think you do that. I think you do that. The problem is when they don't implement the findings and they end up in court and with cost. That who picks up the cost? And even worse, when they still don't, they still ignore the findings, and the fellow and the applicant is to approach the court again for a mandamus, which comes back again with even more cost. That at some point, this cost will have to be incurred. There has to be a personal liability. And I'm raising this thing correctly because the DM was in the meeting, and the team from the ministry is also in the meeting, that they must take that to heart. That when the military ombuds has made its findings, they must apply themselves adequately to those findings. And if they are not happy with the findings, they are welcome to take those findings review, rather than ignoring them and ending up incurring costs and ending up the taxpayer incurring the cost, because very soon shift the cost to the person who was supposed to act on it. I think you are doing very well, General, and I did mention yes, even the issues I mentioned previously have since been taken on board in your report, in your past, in these last year's annual activities. I'm happy with that. And let me thank you for your presentation this morning, and then say you are welcome to take leave at any time when you wish to do so, but the meeting has come to the end. I think the discussion on your presentation has come to the end. We can now move off to the next item on that note. General, maybe your closing remark before you leave, before you take leave.
Thank you very much, Chair. Welcome the discussion that has been submitted about the question that we are posing. Because there are issues that continue to be of concern to the office, especially the issue of non-implementation of the community. Because as an office, we could consider our work finalized when we submit the final report to the minister. But because we care about the complainants that come to the office, that's why we all of them attempt to monitor implementation to make sure that recommendations are implemented in a manner that is generate confidence from the complainants about the impartiality of the office. So I really want to assure the committee that the issue of the turnaround time for finalization complaints is an issue that they are working hard to actually improve on. Because obviously when a person is agreed and there is a complaint in the institution and it takes 3 years to finalize that, you know, it's not an ideal situation. Because by the time then you come up to the finalization of the issue, your recommendation is overtaken by that. So those are the type of issues that as an office you are trying to improve on. But thank you very much. We have, as I indicated, we are since we are attending the international conference, so I'm hoping that we are now at school so that we can continue the preparation for that. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you very much, General. See you at the next golf day. That will be sponsored by Mr. Marek.
It'll be my pleasure. It'll be my pleasure. I must just get invited. Thank you, General. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yes, you are in touch with the host. thank you so much. May I now move off to the next item on the agenda? Is the appeals body, the military veterans appeals. Appeals body. And Ms. Mhlongo, sorry, Dlamini, my apologies, and the team are on the platform. I've welcomed them, introduced and welcomed them. So let me invite her to do the honors. Over to Ms. Dlamini.
Thank you, Honorable.
Ms. Dlamini, let's negotiate time. I give you 20 minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Yes. And thank you for this opportunity. I'd like to mention that I'm not alone in this forum. I also have our advocate, Mashuru, and Mr. Mrolo, who are joining the meeting, as well as our secretariat, Ms. Twala. And the Chairperson has already mentioned that our chairperson, Mr. Msimang, is not well, so he's not joining us, and I'm standing on his behalf today.
we are going to look at the presentation. If it can be slided, Ms. Pala. Ms. Pala, if we can have the presentation slided.
Chairperson, apologies. However, I'm not hosting.
Right. And do you have it on your side?
Yes, we do, Chair, but they do have the access to upload.
Yes, Ms. Pala, even if you are not a host, we can upload it. You can do it as long as you have the laptop before you. But you must also have a know-how. I know these things came long after we were born.
Chairperson, I humbly request that Mr. Brian assist me on your side, because I'm currently using a cell phone as a
I see. No, Brian, she has a limitation. And I hope that's the same thing, so that you are not at cross purposes. Ms. Lamini, is that the same presentation you are looking for?
Yes, Honorable Chair, it is.
Over to you, Lamini.
Thank you very much, members of the Portfolio Committee. The presentation outlined today would cover our executive summary, the legislation and other mandates, the appeal board specific challenges and issues together with responses. We'll also talk about our performance against the executive authorities' priorities and also the national development plan. Our number five will be the program performance information. We'll cover management and use of resources, human resources, financial resources, and also our progress on risk mitigation. Now, I thought I should mention that before we go to the gist of the report, that this report actually comes at a time when we as a country have witnessed an escalation of protests by military veterans, especially those from the non-statutory forces. And these protests are in the form of blocking highways, presenting petitions to the premiers, in this case in the Eastern Cape and also in KZN, or writing letters or actually even occupying the building of the Military Veterans Department. And I am mentioning this thing because what is clear from these protests, which in our view have a potential to destabilize national security in this country, is that while the appeal board is a safe and effective platform for the aggrieved military veterans to can approach it so that they can present their frustrations there, the problem and the challenge that we have is that there is no budget or support that actually ensures that the appeal board is able to reach out through outreach programs to the military veterans in all the corners of the country to inform them about the existence of the appeal board and how it works, and that actually they do not need to take to the street and be violent against the country, if I should say, but they can safely come and vent out and put before the appeal board whatever their grievances are. So by not actually capacitating the appeal board to be able to do this, we are contributing to the condition of unsafety and the threat potentially to national security. Because we're talking about people who have been trained in using arms and who feel aggrieved because they know that they have contributed with their sacrifice, sweat and blood to the liberation that we have today. Now coming to the report,
The aim of this report then is to provide the board with our performance against our own planned targets, because we do not have a strategic plan or an annual performance plan, because according to our powers and duties in Section 20, we are not obligated that we should actually be presenting reports, but we found it prudent for ourselves and also to inform our critical stakeholders of things that we are doing and the performance that we have undertaken. So in this, therefore, we are going to be presenting in terms of the mandate that we have, which is to consider any appeal lodged with it by a military veteran in terms of Section, in terms of Act 18 of 2011. Now, we want to mention also that the Military Veterans Appeal Board derived this mandate primarily from the Military Veterans Act 18 of 2011. And also, we are also looking at this in terms of the sort of power that we derive from the Constitution, Section 33, Subsection 3. And also, we extensively utilize the provisions of the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act when we perform our functions. In that one, we look at Section 20. And also, as the appeal board, we follow our strict rules and procedures that allow us to have fair hearings and pre-hearings. Now, in exercising these powers and duties, we ensure that we conform to all applicable laws in our country. As I have stated, the Constitution, the PAJA, especially in this case, we look at case law of Section 19 to Section 23 of the Military Veterans Act. This one here, as I have said, outlines our duties and powers as well. Now, coming to our performance in the financial year of 2019 and 2020, we have considered that because it was our final year, so we ensured that we stopped all the meetings that we were supposed to have, but we focused on conducting pre-hearings and hearings. To that effect, we have managed in that financial year to look at 35 appeals, as well as now we have 56 pending appeals. We want to mention as well that, which is a good thing, that there was a presentation from the military ombud, that the office of the appeal board only functions with 5 staff personnel who actually have their career and day jobs, meaning that we are only part-time working in the appeal board. This also includes our secretariat, which is only composed of one person and assisted by one person at this point that has been seconded from the Defense Force. We will continue then looking at the first, please, if we can go to the first slide, that will talk about legislation and other mandates. The first slide, please. In terms of the legislation and other mandates, I would propose, Honorable Chair, that we pass that one because I have already alluded to those. Then we will continue and go straight to specific challenges and issues together with responses. We are saying that what we have observed in the appeal board is that we have a challenge regarding the amendment to the Act, because as you have mentioned, that we take our mandate from the Act, and therefore what we are finding is that the policies and the regulations of the department are often than not aligned to the Act. So this becomes a problem because it makes space for more grievances to be lodged with the appeal court. But in this, then there is a remedial action that we have taken. As the members of parliament would be aware that right now we are busy with the bill of the military veterans, which means we are reviewing the act. So as the appeal board, we have also made our recommendations or inputs into how the act is supposed to be reviewed. In this instance, especially pertaining to this issue, our inputs were to ensure that there is alignment between the act and the policies so that we can cut the number of grievances that we are getting. We are also finding that there is a lack of consistency and lack of alignment, as we have said, between the act, the legislation, the regulations, and the policies of the department. The problem here is that because of this lack of consistency and alignment, the department's functionaries tend to take decisions based on their own experience of how a matter ought to be responded to, not on what the legislation or their policy is saying. In other areas as well, we have found that there is non-existence of policies. So you may find that in terms of housing, there is a specific issue that ought to be addressed because a military veteran has requested, for instance, assistance with emergency housing because their house has been, you know, flooded or something like that. But in the absence of a policy, whereas actually the Act is saying you ought to provide housing for a military veteran. So, of course, the answer would be that we cannot because there is no way where it says we should do that. But I want to say that there have been meetings between, as a remedial, there have been meetings between the Advisory Council, the Appeal Board, and the DMV to come up with policies. So our input was sought in order to make sure that the experience that we have gathered on the ground in terms of hearing the appeals from the appellant, now we were able to contribute fruitfully to this process formulation of the department in order that there could be these alignments and consistencies that we are noticing. Now, another challenge that we have in the era right now of COVID-19, where our meetings are supposed to be happening virtual as we are doing right now, this happens also in terms of our hosting pre-hearings and hearings. Our meetings are virtual. The only problem that we have is that the DMV does not have capacity in their provincial offices, ICT capabilities, because what is supposed to happen is that we are supposed to advise the appellants that are due to appear before the board to go to the provincial offices so that they can be hooked up or linked up to a virtual platform so that we can conduct meetings. But this is not possible because of this lack of resources in terms of the DMV. We have taken our own initiative to advise the appellants to use their own cell phones, and then we are able, through a speaker, to be able to do that. But again, the problem is that only military veterans who have good phones or who have phones anyway, who would be able to have their cases being attended by the appeal board in this era of COVID-19. So we are
noting that as something that really needs urgent attention, because COVID-19 cannot make the appeals or the issues of the military veterans not to be heard. Because we believe that actually it is at this point in the life of the globe and South Africa also that the military veterans would have to have assistance in this period. We will go to the next slide that will talk about our contribution linked to our performance against executive authorities' priorities. Our priority one, we have identified this as strengthening governance and oversight protocols to give effect to the provisions of the Act. The progress to date is that we have crafted our terms of reference and also the rules and guidelines. The only thing that still needs to happen is the approval of the executive authority. And we are also busy with drafting our APP. For priority two, it is to provide comprehensive support services to military veterans and where applicable to their dependents. In this case, we're talking about all 11 benefits that are in Section 5 of the Military Veterans Act. To this regard, up to date, we have given legal advice to the executive authority and to the director general because there was an issue that had to do with provision of these benefits that are listed in Section 5. And also we ensure, according to the PAJA and all that, that indeed the disbursement of these 11 benefits are done in an ethical and in an administratively fair and just manner. In terms of our priority 7, it's to maintain the credibility and security of the National Military Veterans Database. To this effect, to date, we have relied on our Section 1 of the Act to really look into ensuring that indeed whoever comes and appealing to say the DMV does not want them to be in the database. So we are relying on the Act to make sure that also fairly and administratively that this appeal is looked into. In terms of priority 8, it's about the implementation of a high-impact communication and marketing strategy and plan. In this regard, I would again go back to what I have mentioned when I was opening this meeting about the unfortunate situation where the appeal board does not have a budget, even though this has been communicated to the DMV in the year previously, and even now we're engaging with the DMV to avail the budget for the appeal board to be able to go to the far-flung areas of our country, to the remote areas, to the rural areas, and reach out to military veterans and tell them that there is an appeal board that is existing. If you are not satisfied with the DMV's decision on your application of whatever benefit, you can come and appeal to the appeal board. And actually, I think we want to express this to the portfolio committee of defense even after hearing the presentation of the ombuds, that we are impressed and we actually like the fact that the ombuds is able to go and do these outreach programs to the serving members of the Defence Force. But I think what we are finding very, very sad on our part is that military veterans, and especially in this case, the ones that come from the non-statutory forces, are the ones who are in the bottom ladder of the food chain, if you want, who are destitute, who are unemployed, who need the services of the DMV more than any other veteran or serving member.
of the Defence Force are the ones actually who are denied the knowledge that actually there is a service that you are provided for in terms of the appeal board, where you can go and ensure that your case is heard and a facilitation or an intervention is made so that you can be able to access your house, so that your children can be paid school fees for, so that you can be given money to get skills development and get a better chance to be employed and have a living for yourself. So actually, yeah, it's really sad to note that actually this has not been given support to, and as a result now, being the appeal board, we did not fold our arms and say we do not have a budget. We have made sure in terms of our progress to date to say there are things that we can do for ourselves in order to assist the situation. And we have provided and printed flyers. We have gone to local radio stations on free, on a free of charge basis. They have accommodated us where we are able to now inform the public or our clients or our stakeholders being military veterans that there is an AB in existence. We have also, we are using a word of mouth type of a situation where the members come to make their appeal. We ask them to go tell other military veterans that actually they can use the services of the appeal. This is not actually an ideal situation. But anyway, in the lack of whatever is available in all the years of the establishment of the appeal board, this is what we have done. But I do want to emphasize it again, honorable members of the portfolio committee, that I think we can make a contribution of preventing a potential threat to national security by really ensuring that this platform that is legislated can reach out to the most deprived of the section of military veterans. We will go to the next slide. In this case, we are flagging the performance that we have managed to achieve today. As you can see there, actually, the total cases that were lodged are 463. So what you are looking in this slide, you are seeing that colored, very huge number of 212 cases that were lodged with us. This one, I will come to it later, but then we also had 79 cases of education support that we dealt with successfully with the DMV, and we have also 69 there is the housing benefit that we completed also, and we have 54 appeals on database, those that want to be included in the database. So when I said successfully, I just mean where we have concluded whatever decision, whether we agreed or we did not agree with the appellant. And then we find two there, which is for medical support, and 15, it was for SRC. SRC is that emergency grant temporarily just to alleviate the socio economic conditions that the military veteran will find themselves in. The 21 there is for the compensation benefit. The 9 will be for skills development. And the other 2 will be for burial support. I said I was going to come back to the 212 number there. The 212 is representing the number of cases that we have received as a class act, if you want, that came from the military veterans that were employed by BRASA. Now I want to mention that when these appeals were put on the desk of the appeal board, our gut feeling was that this is just an employer-employee relationship matter and the appeal board cannot be expected to be involved in such a matter. We put it aside, but as we were getting follow-up and inundated with calls by military veterans, then we decided as the appeal board that maybe we should actually go to our state and see if these members have a case or not, as they are really insisting that we ought to listen to their matter and intervene on their behalf. So when we looked into our act, which is the Military Veterans Act number 18 of 2011, we find that when you look at the benefits relating to military veterans, which is section 5 of the act, section 5 subsection 1e talks about facilitation of employment placement. So it is in this regard then that maybe we thought we should hear what the story of these military veterans is about, because it looks like it is covered in the act. Then we said we ought to then to just give them a hearing before we decide also. We engaged the military veterans of the Eastern Cape in PE and also of the Western Cape in Cape Town. So in both cases, what we got and what we managed to understand was that because of this Section 5, Subsection 1E, it is the Department of Military Veterans that has decided, in accordance with this section, engage GRASA to do an employment placement for military veterans. And on top of that, we were told by the military veteran that there was an agreement in a form of an MOU that was reached between the military veterans, the Department of Military Veterans, and GRASA. Now, later on, the military veterans now were saying that what they are experiencing in their job situation is that at the bottom of the experience that they are going through is that they are being discriminated against because of the fact that they are military veterans from the non-statutory forces. Now, we could not just get a take a decision based on what we are hearing from them. Pada also enjoins us to hear both sides of the story. We wrote correspondence to the DMV to try to get their side of the story and also to have access to the memorandum of understanding, because it is the contents of that memorandum of understanding that will actually tell us whether indeed we are supposed to be involved here or not. We are saying that because when you look at Section 3, Subsection 1F of the Act, talks about the fact that all organs of state or government entities involved with military veterans affairs must cooperate with the DMV to ensure the achievement of the objectives of this Act. In line with the letter of the law, when we were busy debating and arguing amongst ourselves in the appeal board as to whether this is the case that is in our purview, within our purview or not, we also were saying to each other, we should not only look at the letter of the law, but also we should look at the spirit of the law. Because we said to ourselves, there must have been a reason why, in any case, this will even be written in the legislation. We have not, while we're still debating like that, there are other views to say we should actually drop this matter because this is a cut and dry employer-employee relationship matter. But at the same time, there are also these views that are saying the spirit and the letter of the law are pronouncing differently. So the point that we're at this moment, being the AP, is that we cannot actually either abandon this matter or pursue this matter without sound legal opinion that will be presented to our executive authority to say, according to law, indeed, let us not pursue this matter because law does not permit us to. Or to say, we actually are supposed to pursue this matter because according to law, these are the things. So now, as also the very act, which is Act 18, that we are talking about, in Section 19, outlines the powers and duties of the appeal board. And in this regard then, we are saying Section 20, subsection 1, Section 20, subsection 2, sorry, can I just start afresh? We are saying Section 20, subsection 2C outlines the powers and duties of the appeal board. And then subsection C says we have to provide legal advice. So to that regard then, the appeal board has a responsibility and a duty to compile an opinion that will inform whatever decision that ought to be taken in the matter of whether the PRASA issue will be continued or not continued. We're saying that, mindful of the fact that there will be other instances where another department or organ of state will employ military veterans based on the memorandum of understanding that they will enter into or in accordance with this act, and they may have similar situations. Now, it's a question of, are we aware that we may be setting a precedent that we're not going to be able to carry through? Or at the same time, it's a matter of, are we aware of especially the spirit of the act, which makes us to think of the reason why actually such provisions would be made in this act. So for now, I just want to say, yeah, a legal opinion will be provided where the AB is going to advise on this matter. Can we please go to the next slide? In terms of our human resources, especially talking about transformation and equity, looking at the race distribution of our members, we have 3 Africans, and we have 4 Africans, and we have 1 white colleague. In terms of gender distribution, we have 3 male Africans, and we have 1 female African, and 1 male colleague. In terms of number of disabled members, we have none. In terms of number of members in the programs, we have none. So all in all, the appeal board has 5 members. And as I have said, who are on a part-time basis. And then we will go to our financial expenditure. On this one, I will not be presenting on it because after our last appearance before the portfolio committee, we expressed ourselves on the issue of not having access to the budget and all these matters. But subsequent to that, we have had meetings since the taking over of the deputy minister, meetings that are standing now, that are happening without fail, between the DMV in the person of General Mgwebi, the DM, and also ourselves. Other meetings also are between only the DMV and ourselves. So these matters that have to do with finances, which we really expressed our displeasure with, are in the process of being resolved. There is a marked improvement in terms of this area. So right now I'm not going to address the issue of the budget because, unfortunately, by the time actually we were dealing with this matter, I think what I just need to say here is that there is a budget we have had already. There is a budget that is allocated to us, which is 700,000. So out of that budget, then we would be able to, I'm sure, fit in what we really think is priority, the issue of reaching out to military veterans. We are mindful of the COVID protocols in this regard. We will see how we circumvent other things. We will go to our next page, which is the risk mitigation measures. Our next slide, please. Yes. In this one, we only have two. We have flighted the issue of the Military Veterans Act that does not address the governance and accountability framework. In to that regard, then, we're saying the act does not address the all of the department's function, which influences the accountability framework and resolution enforcement by the appeal board. Also, the act furthermore is not aligned with higher order legislation, which is the PSMA in this regard, to reporting time frame. Our mitigation action is that the office will follow the legislative amendment review process to ensure updating and alignment of this. As I have stated, we have made input to the review of the act. And to this regard, I think as the appeal board, we really also want to express ourselves to the portfolio committee to say, as our lawmakers, we really appeal that this legislative process can actually be speeded up because there is so much that is at stake with the current act that we are using, which is so disadvantaging to a large degree members of the non-statutory forces, who are the ones who actually ought to be benefiting more out of this because of their status in society. And then the second one is the independence of the office, which is at risk. Here we are saying the risk is that the credibility of the appeal board to deliver on the mandate is compromised due to a lack of understanding and trust by all stakeholders. In this regard, the office prioritizes concluding cases at record time, and also we believe that we will be assisted with the budget to conduct a number of outreach events. We know that we have 700,000 right now, and we just hope that it will be possible. If it is not possible, we really appeal that when if we approach the department for more money for this, that will be possible. But in any case, it's COVID now. Maybe actually this will fit in terms of looking at how we're going to ensure that we do this. The achievement in this area is that the pre-hearing and hearing drive proved to be successful. The appellants continually are encouraged and assured that the appeal board is independent. Before I close, I thought I would just want to share with the members of the portfolio committee what we have achieved in terms of ensuring that we intervene in the stead of the appellants that approach us in this regard. there is, we have had various cases that were needing the intervention of the appeal court. But we just wanted to make an example of the dire situations that at times we have to intervene on behalf of the appellant. I'm making an example here of Mrs. Mohulo. This is a case of a non-statutory military veteran who happened to be on the Liberation Armies during the time of apartheid, who incurred injuries that he sustained during his fight against the system. Now, the injuries that he incurred went to an extent of causing a permanent ailment to him. So he approached the DMV to get compensation for his injuries and all that. But he was sent from pillar to post and all that until the military veteran passed on. So when Mrs. Mohulo approached the department, again, sent from pillar to post until she approached the appeal board. When the appeal board looked at the matter, actually, this is where the appeal board saw that, you know, at times, you know, it is important for the DMV not only to look at the letter of the law, but also to the spirit of the law. Because now, according to the Act, only a military veteran is supposed to apply for compensation. But in this case, the military veteran had passed on. So the wife is now taking over the application, you know. But thank God, now Mrs. Mohulu actually sent a thankful letter to the appeal board because the appeal that she lodged succeeded, and the DMV also paid out where the family was supposed to receive compensation. Let's go to the next one. We only have two last ones and then I'm closing. The case of Mr. Mumalo. In this case, the support for education, which is in Section 5 of the benefits in the Act, was denied to the military veteran. And the basis of denying the military veteran was that they did not, when they applied for education support for their daughter, they did not include the report. And this now, we're talking about a child who was in preschool. And preschool does not issue report cards. But the DMV, because they have made a rule that there is no application that is going to pass if it's for education when the report card is not attached. Now, the member, which is the military veteran, tried to explain that, but this is just a preschooler. And the preschool does not issue report cards. The DMV says, but our rule is saying this. On that basis, then, the military veteran appeal board, and of course, at the end, engaging with the DMV, the DMV also acceded that they have erred. They were not supposed to be so hard and fast on their rule without looking at the logic of how things ran. And the appeal was successful for the child. And my last one will be Mr. Nisketana. This one was for housing. And the problem here is that here we were dealing with a military veteran who was very sick for a number of years, not even having a house, working and all that. The Department of Military Veterans rejected his housing application on the basis that the bond that was owing, excuse me, Now, when we followed up the matter and interacted with the department again had to accede that they had aired on their side. So this pensioner, who actually waited for all those years to get a house, was very excited and was very grateful for the difference that the appeal board had made in his life and his family, restoring dignity to him. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Ms. Dlamini, for your presentation on behalf of the appeal board. And colleagues, the matter is now on the table. And our last meeting with the entity was on the 24th of June. Their term of office was coming to an end on the 30th of June. And I'm not too sure if the mandate has been refreshed, the board reappointed, or what is the situation, or the term of office has been extended. I think the DM will talk to the issue of the term of office of the board. And then number two, what we picked up and resolved on in the last meeting was that the budget of the entity must be allocated at the commencement of the financial year and be ring-fenced. And the figures that were bandied about at the time were about 600,000 rand. That was said to be the allocation to the entity, but we said it's fine, but they must know that amount upfront, that this is the allocation and the ring fence, so that it does not have to be appropriated for other things other than that which the appeal board is mandated to do. And then two, that the DMV must include a target that talks to their support to the entities in the bad report to them. So that I was saying they must include at least one or two targets that in their own targets that talk to their support to the entity. And then thirdly, that in their annual reports, the DMV must incorporate the report on the annual activities of the of this entity. And then three, that the DMV must advise that they have a responsibility in terms of the law to advise claimants that they have recourse to the appeal board should they be unhappy with a decision of the DMV, and that the Deputy Minister should report on progress regarding the functioning of the appeal board during the DMV's quarterly report engagement with this committee, and like we are doing today. And that the committee will resolve to monitor whether the DMV adheres to Regulation 20, which states that the DMV should, within 30 working days from the date of the application for a benefit, notify the applicant in writing of the outcome. We also resolved that DMV must consider providing a dedicated secretariat to the commission, not the fellows who only attend to the sort of the appeal board, not the fellows who only attend to the work of the appeal board when they have nothing else to do, because they have their own set, responsibilities. And so we suggested that even if it's one person, senior person, who is the head of the secretariat, who is dedicated to the work of the of the appeal board, so that that person you know, is able to make follow-ups and attend to matters, day-to-day matters of the appeal board. And that the team, the support staff, sorry, and that the board must be provided with the tools of trade, and so that they are able to perform and discharge, perform their mandate and discharge their responsibilities effectively. So these were matters that were captured in the last meeting of the portfolio committee. So I thought I should go through these matters so that we don't revisit them. I'm not too sure time for the acting director general to comment on this, but what I pick up from the presentation by Ms. Lamine is that from the last meeting of the 20th with the board, between the board and this committee, and there has been satisfactory progress made in their interaction with the department. So I'm pleased to note that the cooperation between the appeal board and the department has improved remarkably since our intervention, and that they have started receiving the tools of, and that they now have about 700,000 ring-fenced for their annual activities, and so I'm happy with that. Right, colleagues, I thought it's just not progress being made and in that direction. And we also welcomed the fact that the Deputy Minister was involved to steer this cooperation between the two entities. It is as a result of his intervention that we are seeing progress and being recorded and forward. Colleagues, the matter is on the table. Once you have asked questions, and probably I will let the team answer those questions, and then later invite the DM to make a comment. Colleagues, the matter is on the table.
Yeah, person, you probably see my hand is up, right?
Mute your mic, Chairperson.
You are muted.
Oh, sorry. No, thanks so much, colleagues. I recognize three hands on the system, Marae, Modise, and Bukers, in that order. Let me invite you, Marae, first.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I just wanted to get confirmation in terms of the status of the appeals board. Because if I read through some of the documentation, in some cases it refers to must in terms of your functions and in other in terms of may. Now, in terms of your findings and recommendations, it seems like it is only recommendations. How do you operate to make sure that your findings is not just considered, but are accepted and will be implemented? Because that will be an uncomfortable situation if you can't see that your findings and recommendations are enforced. That's the one point. then in terms of just of the budget and that's going forward, you'll have to communicate with us. Obviously, you are dependent on the same department to which you are making recommendations also for your budget. So we must make sure that your budget and your allocations will not be affected in terms of whether the department will implement your recommendations or not. If there are obviously recommendations or requests to us as a portfolio committee going forward in terms of amendments maybe to some of the regulations or even the Act, so that you have got more teeth and muscle in terms of what you have found, that'll be very important, because you know we must make sure that you are well resourced. Otherwise you are teethless, and I think that is not what we want. Then the last point is just in the presentation, I assume that it's per example that you refer to the cases of the non-statutory force members, which is obviously valid and is justified cases. But if you can give us an indication of split between statutory force members and non-statutory force members, so that we can just see, you know, what is going on amongst our members or veterans, especially in this case, you know, where is the biggest need and what is the kind of need and cases that is brought to before you, and how do you, you know, come to an end result and a verdict on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Modisa.
Thank you so much, Chair. I think the sooner we deal with the legislation and the policy that will guide the functioning of this institution, a better Chair. And I also want to echo on Mr. Marie's issues where he raised issues of resources. It really doesn't make sense that the institution has to depend on the department, that they also have to receive its own clients and assist in appealing decisions that would not have satisfied the clients with, in this instance, the military veterans, who would have then seeked assistance from the DMV, and when those members are not satisfied, they then have to go to the appeals to get some assistance from them. And it's unfortunate that the appeals board then also has to receive resources from the very same institution. I think it's something that needs to be looked at. Also, it's worrying that they function on part-time staff. It then means that the focus and the attention is not given 100% to the services that they need to provide, because they also have careers that they need to serve, and it means as and when they have time, they then also function or do the work of the appeals board. So also, are there reasons why they are functioning on a part-time staff instead of having permanent posts that are funded in the institution? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much, Bukas.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm glad that some of the issues are addressed. But, Chair, because of budgetary constraints, we deny the military veterans information. And then there's a platform for those who want to play on the vulnerability of those members. And they lose money, Chair, because now they pay as much as 100 to 150 rand to speed up the process. And for them, it's better to pay because they don't want for someone to come and assess or to explain. At least, according to them, there's hope. An African says, Chair, that a man's crepe na in a history alam. So for them, it's a story alarm. And, Chair, our people is suffering and the dignity of our government is at stake. Secondly, Chair, how can the Department of Military Veterans assist the appeals board to serve the best interests of our former soldiers? And in the engagement of the appeals board with the DMV or the DOD,
did they ever submit a progressive plan to them to address the challenges of reaching out, except of speaking about the faction? And I think, Chair, they must speed up the process to appoint a dedicated secretary for the appeals board, because there will be then someone who will follow up and track on some of the resolutions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Thabo, Honorable Thabo, okay.
Thank you, Chair, and I must take this opportunity as well to welcome the presentation from the Appeals Board. It is quite progressive, taking stock from our last meeting with them and the advancements that are reflective out of the presentation. Chair, I have a question in relation to their powers and duties, which are clearly stated that the appeal board certain roles to play, which are outlined there. My question is with regard to the Military Veterans Act. I just want to find out if the appeals board, because they have got a responsibility to or give advice to the minister or the director general regarding any legal matter pertaining military veterans, what is their view, or if they have considered or if they have been given an opportunity to input on the legal interpretation that is problematic on the military veteran as contained in the Act, and which we assist with as the committee and the department with regard to the definition of military veterans. I just want to find out if they have been given an opportunity, if they considered giving an advice with regard to that particular matter, which has made a call to us to actually initiate amendment with regard to that particular legislation. Secondly, my second question is that the appeal board may also summon any person who, in its opinion, may be able to give information, so forth and so on. I want to understand whether it is in the context of an appeal that was made, or can they also, in the current situation where we have seen military veterans taking to the streets, does that particular clause give them powers to summon those who organized the march to hear from them what are the challenges, and to what an extent can they then intervene and assist if they've got such powers to summon any person with regard to issues pertaining military veterans. I just want to get the context as to what an extent can they use these powers, or these powers are in the context of only an appeal lodged. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you so much. Thabo did not reference the provisions he was talking to. I was then able to quickly scan the Act. I think he's talking to the powers and the duties of the Appeal Board, Section 20. The first one with regard to the board advising the minister or DG is section 20, subsection 1A. And then the one with regards to the powers to summon any person is section 20, subsection 3, 1A. That should just do that for completeness of his input. All right, colleagues, I think we've covered all the those who have raised their hands. And I know Shelembe was on the line, but due to network problems, I think he was cut out. But I advised him to go to the nearest mountain and then go right to the top of it for network. I'm sure he's still looking for the mountain. Thank you so much. Right.
That was a funny one. That was a funny one. from one KZN guy to another KZN guy. You know that mountain.
I will know the mountains. There's a bag full of mountains. So colleagues, thank you so much. Over to you, Ms. Lamini.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I will start with the question of, I think there was a question that had to do with our staffing, to say how are we able then to do all these things when we are part-time like that. I just want to clarify that while we are five, we have the secretariat who is permanent. The secretariat is permanent, even though she is one and she has a second G. Of course, we had requested that we want that office to be beefed up. And in terms of the five members of the appeal board, one, even though he is part-time in terms of payments and all that, but he is actually dedicated his whole time in the work of the appeal board. But he is not paid as a full-time employee. He is paid as a part-time employee. But all he does in his life is to do the work of the appeal board. And the issue of the bank, or to say we should not just talk about the budget, but if we emphasize so much about the issue of the outreach program, yes, we have submitted our plans to the FNC. We embarked on a study on our own to check how many military veterans are in which region, and in all these ones, if we want to go see the military veterans of the Northern Cape, which other regions are we going to combine with those and so on. So we submitted a full plan that also talks of resource allocation to the DMV, which at the end said we believe that this is the amount of money that we would need in order to carry out our roadshows. That is what we called it when we presented it to the DMV. So that was done, Honorable Member. The question also, I will leave other questions to my fellow colleague who sits on the board, who is one of our legal minds. But before he comes in, I will just also try to answer some of the questions. The first question was on the status of the appeal board in terms of the decisions that we made. These ones for us are decisions that are binding, to an extent that if the department is not agreeing with the decision that we have taken, the next step of point of call are the courts, where our matter now will have to be decided upon by the courts. I think it's the High Court. My legal colleague will correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to believe that the next step becomes the High Court. Now, in terms of the, I think we would like to also express our appreciation to the invite
to say actually the portfolio committee is available for us in terms of intervention, where we find that even in issues of budget we need, because actually that makes us excited to see that our lawmakers are also, you know, serious about ensuring that our clients, the military veterans indeed, are covered the way they are supposed to. There was also a question about the issue of whether we are using what is provided in the legislation into giving advice on matters, and the example given was the definition of military veterans as an example or specifically. In this instance, I would want to respond to say, yes, the Act is saying that the appeal board has powers and duty to offer advice, legal advice. So in this instance, there are some cases or there are some legal opinion or advice that the appeal board have forwarded to the Department of Military Veterans, and I think to the minister as well, but things that pertain to the affairs of military veterans. In terms of the military veterans definition in particular, I want to mention that we have had an opportunity as the appeal board to make input to this review process now of the Military Veterans Act. And actually, this is one of the key issues that the appeal board has made very fundamental and very important contribution relating to how we think the issue of defining who a military veteran is supposed to be. So that we have done. And I don't know if I have missed some, but I am leaving the rest to my colleague who is also attending. Thank you very much, Honorable President.
Thank you, Chair.
My hand is up, Honorable Chair. Morolo, yes? Yes, Morolo. Thank you.
Well, I just want to add on what my... good afternoon, everybody. Honorable Chair, Honorable Deputy Minister, Members of Parliament, Honorable Members of Parliament, and all those who are attending, and my colleagues from the Appeals Board. I just want to make just a brief clarification, you know, to sum up, you know, the role, you know, and function of the Appeals Board. You know, its primary function is to ensure that the department exercises its power and complies with the constitutionally mandated principles of lawfulness, reasonableness, and procedural fairness. And that whenever it takes a decision which is adverse to a military veteran, they should provide, you know, the reasons. It is important, you know, for the military veterans to approach the appeals board, but the High Court will not entertain any matter if, of course, the military veteran has not exhausted the internal remedies of going through the appeals board. In that respect, I think, you know, the military veteran should be made aware, because, you know, those who don't know the functions of the appeals board, they cannot go to court. And also, the department, before it decides, you know, to review any matter, take it to the High Court. I think this process is also going to be implemented after the intervention of the Honorable DM. That, you know, they should fine reasons from the appeals board why this judgment was taken against them, so that they should understand before taking the matter on review. And we also dealt with, you know, a stony issue of the default judgment taken against the department. We agreed in a recent meeting that what the appeals board is going to do is going to amend its rules and, you know, procedures to include also that, you know, the department should be afforded an opportunity to apply for a rescission of those judgments. They should apply for rescission, but those rescissions should be accompanied by a condonation. Because, you know, to save costs, you know, it does not really make sense when the department, you know, having default judgment ordered against them, they go seek the services of an attorney, go to the High Court to have those rescinded, you know, because in any event, the High Court will not entertain a matter which is default. It will refer that matter back to the appeals board, because the High Court is of the opinion that the High Court deals with these matters on a daily basis. They understand what is happening if it is a default judgment. So we are now in the appeals court is busy in the process of amending its rules to find a proper procedure so that the default judgment should be rescinded. Because at the end of the day, the appeals court grants a judgment in 2019. The department does not implement the decision. They go to High Court. Another 2 years is going to be wasted. So I think this will benefit also the everybody, in fact. And then also on the powers to subpoena. Because I think the Act only confines the powers and duties of the appeals board to where they are handling the appeal. Because, you know, we cannot just subpoena anybody when there is no synergy, there is no connection between the appeals board and whoever we are subpoenaing. But if a person, the case is linked to another person, like now we have subpoenaed the head of college, where now we want to find out what happened to the 6,000 which the military veteran says it is missing from the funds which she was supposed to be reimbursed. So we don't know whether, you know, he will obey the subpoena or not. And also, on the conflict of interest, of course, I think that has already been dealt with, you know, that, you know, we cannot expect much from the department when we are taking decisions against them. I think also on the one of the finance, I think basically, you know, these are the issues which, of course, you know, add upon what my colleague Nomsa has alluded to. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Moroni. I had a difficult pronouncing your statement. You know why? It's because in our language we don't have an R. So we convert an R to L, so it becomes a Mololo. Like the name is not Cyril in our call it Cyril. All right. Colleagues, you've listened to the replies. Sis Nomsa, are you done with the replies?
Thank you, Chair.
Can I add something which is very important?
All right.
through you, Chair. Now, I just omitted, you know, to mention, you know, another, those powers of the appeals board do not only reside in Section 1, subsection, Section 20, subsection 1, A, B, and C, but also Section 20, subsection 2, C, which of course it says the appeals board may provide the required legal advice. So this gives the appeals board the power. Even if, you know, a matter apparent from the look at it, like the CASA matter, it is an employer-employee relationship. But in exercising those powers in terms of the Act, the appeals board has a duty to advise, you know, the department, not to take a decision against PRASA, so that the department may be able to fulfill its statutory functions. I thank you, Chair.
All right. Okay, colleagues, thank you. Chabo, do you want to come back? I see your hand is up.
No, Chair, I think it did not, I did not lower it. Sorry.
Okay. Colleagues, no, thank you so much. Colleagues, I'm happy we have come to this point. I will now invite the General Mkwepi just to check if he has any comments to make. And then after him, I will invite, the DM, and then we close. What I omitted mentioning as flowing from our resolutions of the meeting of the 26th is that they must convert these rules and procedures into regulations. You can't have an entity operating outside the regulations. It's a serious omission and it's got to be attended to with the agents. And the point was made also the point was made by Modise that you must quickly improve your legislation, the DMV legislation. I know that there is a process underway that will start with the white paper being developed and then amendment later on. We're happy to receive, your comments that you have started making an input into the policy review process, as it were. No, we're happy to listen to that. All right, colleagues, so now we are almost at the end of our discussion. General, do you have anything to say at this moment? I know it's work in progress. We're not expecting you to give us any, we're not expecting any final product this time. But we're satisfied that the matters, if you say the matters are receiving attention, we'll leave it at that, and then we'll then move to the DM. I think, Director General?
Thanks, Chair, and good afternoon, Chair, honorable members, DM, and colleagues. Just to close the books in terms of the 19-20 financial year, that part of the other aspect when it comes to funding is that the appeals board, to achieve what they have achieved in terms of traveling and subsistence expenditure, the amount which is has been budgeted for both the advisory council and appeals board just for domestic traveling, accommodation for food and beverages, including transport. We did budget 1.2 million, and they have spent of that amount of money about 953,579 rand. So that was the amount which was at least do what needed to be done in the 1920 financial year. In relation to their allowances in terms for the appeal court only, in terms of the 1920 financial year, we were able to spend 545,000 rands for their allowances for the financial year 1920. So that's the kind of budget which at least we're able to spend on behalf of the appeals court. My understanding, this was made available probably a bit late in terms of the appeals that were present, but I just wanted to, without going into detail, to mention that. And to chair, for this financial year, we have allocated 700,000, as it was indicated, that amount of money is available for expenditure. And of course, with the challenges of expenditure this financial year, as a department at this time of the year, we are saying that if they would be able, as he said, to come up with a plan and implement those plans in terms of the outreach programs, we think we can actually set fund most of those until the end of the financial year. Of course, there's a question of the pandemic, which we are also talking to in terms of those, but there is at least some money to spend. So without spending time in terms of legislative environment and the policy framework, we are dealing with that. We have received, as he said, inputs from the appeals board, and that's part of the stakeholder consultation, and we're looking at that, and that's been taken on board. Lastly, the marching orders, based on the issues which you've just mentioned, where we've got to put up targets for the annual growth plan, and also make sure that at least we say something at the annual report on all the issues you've mentioned, we've taken note. And person who's at the level of the deputy director, who is now presently seconded to assist on a permanent basis, who's been there working with the day, has been at least linked with the office of the accounting officer, where there's a director to support and assist in terms of a number of things. I will, and the tools of the trade, I think we can say in the main, they are almost there. The only thing which is outstanding, they've been received. The only thing which is outstanding is the use of the laptops for them to be able to do their work. But that is also the due to the question of the supply. But we are waiting for them. I'll stop at that. Thanks, sir.
It would be amiss of me if I don't say that that is a significant progress made in the last, how many months? June, July, August, September, in the last 3 months since our meeting. Thank you so much, General. Mhlonishwa, UDM, just to close the discussion.
Chairperson and honorable members of the committee and colleagues from the department and the appeal board. Thank you for this opportunity to make some observations as we close our meeting. I must thank first Chair through you, the Deputy Chair or the Acting Chair of the Appeal Board, Ms. Dlamini, for the care and together with the Mr. Morolo, for the time they have dedicated to getting the appeal board to deliver on the mandate it has been, you know, assigned. There are sacrifices to get that board functioning sincerely appreciated, I must say that. The point which I wanted to start with has been succinctly articulated by Mr. Morolo, and it pertains to what the forte of the appeal board is.
he saw aptly articulated it. I don't want to spoil it, to say what is the purpose of the appeals board. And foregrounding the responsibility to ensure that there is a promotion of administrative justice within the Department of Military Veterans in the way the administration executes its function. It is that. And of course, in the act, there's only one sentence. There's only one sentence for me that is critical, and we have referred to it. That section 20 in bracket 1A, in bracket A, which says the appeals board must consider any appeal lodged with it by a military veteran against any decision taken by an official in, of the Department of Military Veterans, of course, in terms of this act, which adversely affects the rights of that military veteran. That is essentially what the appeals board is there to achieve. And it has been unfortunate that, and we have agreed with colleagues, that tension emerged over time between the appeal board and the department's management, to a point where in its work the appeals board even has findings that are made as a default judgment, meaning judgments that are handed down without the department being heard on those issues. When a board's function is to actually get the department to realize its faults in the decisions that it has taken. So, it was unfortunate that the appeals board was at times compelled, because of the unavailability of the department, to take decisions without the department being heard. And therein lies the seeds of the dysfunctionality that developed between the two bodies. But otherwise, the two bodies actually belong together. This is an appeals board of the decisions of the department. And the decisions of the department now and again, there will always be grievances against the department, must be appealable. So the department can't function without an appeals board if we can, craft a congruency out of that. The department cannot function without an appeals board, because its decision must always be in sync with the principles that Mr. Morolo referred to. But the second point that I want to make, honorable members, is that the appeals board is not responsible for the fiduciary duties of the Department of Military Veterans, meaning propriety overall in the mandate of the Department of Military Veterans. That is the responsibility the ministry carries at any given time. The failures and successes of the Department of Military Veterans stops with the minister. So, my point is that the board, the appeals board, should not be understood to be responsible for every failure of the department. Every failure of the department is the responsibility of the ministry. I'm raising this because the opening remarks of the acting chair made reference, and correctly so, of the grievances that are responsible for the protests by military veterans out there who are complaining about the neglect of their plight. But the neglect of their plight, the body that is responsible for that is the Ministry of Defense and Military Veterans. It's not the appeals board. So I am saying, and I'm raising this with a lot of circumspect. I'm raising it with a lot of circumspect because those protests have a lot in them, a lot of issues in them that we've got to deal with, and to reduce them to be grievances that would have been solved if the appeals board was accessible. If the appeals board, for instance, was able to do road shows, would be to misunderstand what is sitting at the center of those grievances. Let me go further and say this. The appeals board profile and accessibility, the acting chair is correct to say, has to be addressed. Military veterans must know about this appeals board, and they must know about how to access it. And I have said to the department, we must look at what we can do with the little resources we have to assist the appeals board's profile, to raise the profile of the appeals board. The last point, just in relation to broadly what this appeals board stands for, there is a point that is raised that also concerns me, that the appeals board, out of good intention, may end up loading itself, even with the limited capacity it has, resources-wise and human, in particular human resource capacity, it may end up loading itself by taking responsibility for things that are also outside of the legal purview of the appeal board. The appeal board cannot take grievances of members of the South African National Defense Force who are in service. Because by definition, members of the South African National Defense Force who are in service are not military veterans. So the appeals board is an appeals board of citizens who are customers of the Department of Military Veterans. And if we can, you know, navigate this terrain with that sharpness of what belongs to our table as the appeals board and what does not, it will actually release the appeals board and allow for more time to deal with the issues, the many issues that are affecting military veterans. There is a point about the capacity of the appeals board, which chair we must address. I have expressed a view that the appeals board, and we all agree, cannot be supported by a secretariat of one person. But not only that, you can't have a body that must take decisions that are legally sound, which does not have legal support. The appeals board in the secretariat that services it, that sits within the Department of Military Veterans, there must be a legal person there who helps the processing of cases that eventually gets tabled, come before the appeals board. That will make the work of the appeals board relatively easier, and may actually assist the appeals board to sit for lesser hours than the punishing hours that they spend when they're processing issues, if the secretariat has a legal command. But those are matters which I said the department in its plans and budgets has to go back to and see if
we can realize that, because I believe it is the idea. Of course, you see, there are other details which I prefer not to go into. What I've said, I think, suffices in relation to that. There is a point, Chair, which I should, before I step down, touch on, the BRASA issue. Chair, I have also perused the fine that was sent to the Minister, of Defense and Military Veterans by the Speaker of Parliament around the BRASA matter. The issues that are raised there in the letter to the Speaker, the so-called BRASA military veterans are raising three issues. The first one are the remuneration levels of the community that is in, of military veterans employed by BRASA in the Western Cape, the discrepancies of what they are paid as against what those in the KZN and the, those in the Gauteng are paid. The other matter is to deal with their desire to actually be integrated not just into the BRASA section of the security establishment of the organization, but they must be part of the BRASA corporate security. If there are other areas of security, in my understanding, less, you know, I misunderstand what has been referred to. If there are other areas where there are security services being provided within BRASA, that these military veterans should be also employed in those areas, not only in the area where they are confined now. But the others, of course, the last point is the issue about black economic empowerment, that they must access ministerial, you know, jobs and the accorded the training that will make that possible. And of course, there's been victimization as they were raising this grievance. The point that I want to raise is that in the very same report prepared by the appeals board itself, the appeals board makes a correct statement there when it says the Department of Military Veterans, as a custodian of military veterans, should intervene in cases where the military veterans employed in terms of Section 5E have material disputes with the respective organs of state or government entities. The Department of Military Veterans must take that responsibility. Not the appeals, the appeal board, the department. And I agree with this report that was generated in August, a year ago, in August 2019, and signed by the chair of the appeal board, because that is the right way to go. I do not want to go into the issues now of this case that involves military veterans that were employed by BRASA. Suffice to say, they are from as early as 2012, they are military veterans who we sought employment opportunities for in projects that were generated and offered by many other departments, including the Department of Water and Forestry in those years. Military veterans got employed there. Any conditions of work, of employment, that those departments took these military veterans on, it would have been the responsibility of the department to negotiate those conditions. And if there are matters which military veterans employed in such projects are unhappy about, they are correct to take those matters to the department to say, guys, the people you said must assist us with reviving our economic livelihoods. They are shortchanging us in this way or that way or that. In relation to BRASA, if that placement happens that way, the Department of Military Veterans has a responsibility to do so. But in the same file that came from the Minister, from the Speaker of Parliament, it is also suggesting that
Sanfa was involved in the placement of these military veterans there. So we need to look at just how these military veterans were placed in these job opportunities and what contractual agreements we must fall back to get these grievances addressed. But lastly, some of the grievances are clearly grievances that must be dealt within the realm of other legislations, other statutes. Like for instance, the labor law, black economic empowerment and what have you. It is those statutes that we must actually make it a point that we look into to say what do they tell PRASA to observe in order to avoid this dispute that they are having with militants. I don't think it is a matter which, respectfully so, I don't think it's a matter that we should burden the appeals board with. Otherwise, Chair, the work of the appeals board is it's work in progress. I'm very optimistic that there is a lot of room for improvement, and fortunately, there is also the spirit, the right attitude, and the willingness to improve the situation. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, DM, for the comments you've just made. I think some of the things you have made mention of still require some further discussion between yourself and the entity. And other comments border on issues of policy. I think that now that you are reviewing policy, I'm sure they would be elaborated in the policy that would come out of that policy review process. So we'd want to leave it at that, because the interim of the executive, and would only hold you to account on them once they have been finalized and placed before all of us to oversee implementation against them. So I'd want to leave it at that for now. And maybe my last point was on PRASA, so that you know. They've also written to the speaker and to ask for her intervention. And the speaker has since referred the matter to us. And amongst the demands that they are putting forward, one, we demand parity of remuneration in respect of entry-level notch that is SPO level applied in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. They're saying that is SPO level applied in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal was not equally applied in the Western Cape. Instead, we were remunerated as at PO level. And that was in contrast with our counterparts in the said regions. And we appeal against this fundamental inequality. B, we demand further integration into PRASA corporate security and not to be restricted to work under PRASA rail only. C, we demand to be capacitated with skill and training for opportunities at managerial level as part of a transformation. And I'm therefore saying good luck. But there again, you must separate between what strictly belongs to employer-employee relations and that which you can intervene. So, because you may end up having to be drawn into matters that are governed by other legislative frameworks, which creates platforms to deal with labor disputes, to achieve labor peace
in the workplace. So I'm saying be careful not to collide with other labor, with other laws that regulate the environment. As you do it, you must step into it carefully and with caution. So I'm calling for you to exercise caution in the matter. I'm not commenting on it. It's still with you. All what we'll tell them is that the department is still attending to the matter. So we don't want to enter into the fray. As to whether we would have the capacity to enter into the fray, I don't know. But I leave it to the wisdom of the committee members. Colleagues, we have come to the end of the presentation today. Thank you very much for taking the time out to be at this meeting. We must join Minister Dido Mboweni at 3 o'clock when he takes the podium to deliver his medium-term budget policy statement this afternoon. And you have a break until that time, until 3 o'clock, just to take whatever you can take to fill up your stomach and boost your energy for that time. With that, colleagues, dear, ngiyabonga mhlonishwa, and ngokuba khona, I think ngiyasiza, because we would not have made the progress we have recorded had you not been in that meeting. That meeting, it was a watershed discussion, because they are now able to, you know, make things to move forward. And Sisnamsa, thank you very much, and thanks to your team as well. Colleagues, that's the end of the meeting. Wish you a good afternoon. Thanks. Thank you, sir.